Thank you, Paige. I'm Carolyn Huang. As mentioned, I am a graduate student at UNC. And I'm very honored today to join the breastfeeding community to speak with you about global justice through a human right to breastfeeding. Millions of infants die each year from a lack of optimal feeding in the developing world, and breastfeeding holds the potential to save more lives than any other public health intervention. Yet despite this unrivaled life-saving potential, international law has failed to produce the global policy necessary to ensure the protection, promotion, and support of breastfeeding. Today, we will examine the factors that have led to this policy evolution. I'm going to run briefly through discussion on breastfeeding as a reproductive health benefit, on breastfeeding's integral role within maternal and child health, and breast milk substitute industry's role in producing suboptimal health outcomes. Part two is going to discuss the evolution of breastfeeding policy, where we trace policy failures to curb industry, fragmentation in its approach, and movement away from breastfeeding's origins in the human right to health. Part three illustrates why we, as the breastfeeding community, need the human rights framework. And to operationalize this right, Part 4 proposes an organizational and legal structure to translate this right to breastfeeding into global breastfeeding policy. There are innumerable benefits to mother and child arising from breastfeeding, mostly too many to actually fit onto one slide. However, formula interferes with the link between breastfeeding and health. It does not confer equal health benefits. It puts the child at risk to waterborne illness, bottle feeding contaminants, and contamination arising from improper storage. These are all conditions which are prevalent within developing countries. The bottom line is, exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life with continued breastfeeding for at least 1 year could prevent 15% of child deaths. Compared to the exclusively breastfed child, children who are never breastfed bear about 14 times the risk of dying in the first 6 months of life. Among older children, the non-breastfed child is about 2 times more likely to die. The infant formula industry is a deeply entrenched interest at odds with the protection and promotion of breastfeeding. As a multi-billion dollar multinational industry, unethical marketing practices that were documented decades ago still persist today. Industry has built relationships with health establishments, provided sponsorships for providers in training, given free samples without acknowledging the irrevocability of formula feeding once breast milk stops producing, and misled women through advertisements touting the technological benefits of infant formula using wording like certified by doctors or medically proven. The bottom line, industry has persisted for decades. Global breastfeeding policy to date has failed to curb the industry's proliferation in marketing. An industry cannot be stopped without intervention. Early breastfeeding policy established frameworks to protect, promote, and support breastfeeding while addressing its decline due to formula marketing under a human right to health. The major policy developments began with the Declaration of Alma-Ata and Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination, CEDAW. The Alma-Ata affirms the fundamental right to health by supporting strong primary health systems, and CEDAW is a complementary framework obligating governments to prevent discrimination against women on the basis of pregnancy, maternity, and marital status. The 1982 International Code of Marketing of Breast Milk Substitutes were the first set of international guidelines to incorporate breastfeeding promotion and provide industry marketing standards. Building off of Alma-Ata and CEDAW, it was the most comprehensive policy supporting breastfeeding to date, bringing actors from all spectrums of the breastfeeding policy community. But it was limited in its influence. It lacked enforceability and accountability mechanisms and was neither sufficiently specific nor legally enforceable. Within nations, inertia in ministries, unawareness of its existence by policymakers, and lack of legal competency stunted the code's implementation. 3 years later, only 7 states had codified the code into national law. 8 years later, the UN General Assembly adopted the 1989 Convention on the Rights of the Child, the CRC, to address weaknesses in the code. It solidified states' legal and moral obligations to ensure each child's right to health was met through information and access to education. By doing so, the CRC would attempt to fill basic gaps in the knowledge of child health and nutrition. The Innocenti Declaration of 1990 reflected the spirit of the CRC and its objectives, but adding an additional objective, the 10 steps to successful breastfeeding. This program would affect hospital policy and maternal services, adding yet another goal to our already ambitious framework. In the 1990s, we begin to see a departure from the fundamental right to health. In 1992, UNICEF, a seminal leader in breastfeeding promotion, would state that failure in pursuing goals that were relatively easily achievable and which benefit millions of children is perhaps a worse dereliction of duty, if not violation of the spirit of the CRC, than focusing on violations of certain child rights for which there are no readily feasible actions. This marked their focus on achieving breastfeeding objectives through a targeted approach exclusive of human rights. Finally, the UN 2000 General Comment 14 in the UN Committee on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights Interpretation of Health Obligations does not even discuss breastfeeding in its clarification of maternal, child, and health and reproductive health. It has written breastfeeding out of the right to health. In moving away from a human right to health, global breastfeeding policy shifted to a programmatic approach which neither addresses underlying environmental conditions affecting breastfeeding, nor the counteracting advertising which discourage mothers from breastfeeding. Why is human rights an optimal approach to support breastfeeding? It offers a framework that supports the mother's right to choose the best method to feed her child without intervention by outside forces. It creates a system of accountability by which the mother-child dyad are collective rights holders who can demand a right to health from the international community. Human rights will clarify and clearly stipulate the mother's needs. It also clarifies the obligations of the duty bearer, the international community. To fulfill this obligation, the international community will then create and support policies to realize these rights. And this involves promoting the decision to breastfeed through hospital policies, educating the mother so she can make a fully informed decision, regulating formula industry, and supporting the development of primary healthcare systems. Just now, I have clarified the human right to breastfeed. But it is necessary to move beyond the breastfeeding world and engage with the multitude of perspectives relevant to breastfeeding. As this diagram illustrates, breastfeeding is inextricably linked to 3 areas. Under international law, we must reestablish breastfeeding's foundations in the human right to health and connect it to public health goals. Like ships passing each other in the night, both human rights and public health organizations neglect breastfeeding. Human rights scholars show little interest in addressing contentious policy frameworks for public health. To the extent that breastfeeding is considered a human right, scholars view it only as a right to food. Likewise, health rights frameworks ignore breastfeeding, and public health agencies have turned away from the right to health. But breastfeeding needs these 2 vessels. Without a normative foundation in the right to health, international organizations will struggle to develop enforceable global breastfeeding policies. And without international organizations, breastfeeding rights will lose a valuable platform for implementation. How can we realize a right to breastfeeding through global health policy? A coordinated global health partnership would be better able to channel funds from donors, allocate resources and responsibilities, and streamline efforts to create a more efficient national health system. WHO has centralized expertise and political influence to resolve issues in health rights internationally. It can constrain and shape state behavior and act as a supranational executive body for breastfeeding. Of course, WHO cannot do it alone. Creating an intersectoral rights-based framework for breastfeeding will require collaboration of several UN specialized agencies with rights-based mandates. And advocacy organizations are the glue binding these partners together. They must continue their integral role in monitoring and informing the public of violations in formula marketing practices. To date, an estimated 1.4 million infant deaths and 43.5 million disability-adjusted life years are lost due to suboptimal breastfeeding conditions in the developing world. 28 years after the code, global breastfeeding policy is still plagued by weak accountability mechanisms. To date, 13 of the 16 largest breast milk substitute companies still substantially violate the code by marketing to health workers. 8 of the 16 continue to distribute free samples, and Nestle remains one of the worst violators of the code. In some countries, breastfeeding promotion is outspent by the formula industry 10 to 1. In developing countries, the situation is more dire, with low-income women still led to believe that breast milk substitutes provide the best nourishment for their babies. We have the power to change that today by promoting and protecting every woman and child's right to health through a human right to breastfeed. Thank you.
We've talked about this a great deal. The issue remains that we've had this right on the books, the international one, but by 1990, when the Innocenti Conference had come along, less than 20 countries have created legislation about the code. And today, it's only about 80 countries that have any legislation, and it's not enforced. So how do we translate this global policy that breastfeeding is a right into action when these 20 some odd years since the code has seen so little action?
That's a very good question. Ben,
what other rights areas help us make the fact that rights exist become effective? I to me, it's litigation. Somebody has to stand up and demand the right and then litigate for it.
And to litigate for this, one would imagine that you need a form of hard law, something that you can base it upon, whereas the code is a non-binding code rather than an actual piece of international legislation. So when WHO compromises in the end of the 1970s and decides to go the non-obligatory route, it takes away its own ability to then enforce it through courts of law.
But one of the things that comes to mind to me is, if I'm not mistaken, the law on child abuse originally was initiated through a case where they talked about the child as being an animal because there were laws protecting animals from abuse. And then that case was argued publicly and eventually led to the development of laws against child abuse. So it's possible to come up with ways in which, even if something isn't classified in the world really, the strictly beneficial rights terms and incorporate into law, that you can still do something that makes it come to the fore. And the question is, what is that?
Well, you can either get to law on this by going the judicial route, and it empirically hasn't really been the successful route.
Has it been used?
Not particularly, because there isn't enough to go on. There isn't even the animal rights at this point, to borrow from your analogy. And so WHO, when it initially came up with the code, said if the code doesn't work, we'll come back and use international legal regulation. And it never came back. I think one of the arguments that comes out of this article is this idea that WHO gave the code a 30-year time frame as an experiment and failed as an experiment to change state behavior. So maybe they need to come back and do something better.
Jason?
Yeah, I
have
a question.
Are you
the
primary
client?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Then let me ask you, for my own information, is there a right to food?
Yes.
That's the hook.
And that's the hook that people have taken. Yet the right to food is significantly more ambiguous than a right to health. The right to health has a much much longer line of jurisprudence attached to it, a much more specific set of obligations. And so whereas a lot of people have gone the right to food route, talking about food safety with regard to the formula, the right to health seems at its very end the goal that people are concerned about.
But you can't talk about health of the child without talking about the right to food. I mean, you know, somehow those two things are completely linked. And how do we get, how do we use that linkage to get something changed so that there is a more deep acceptance that the right to breastfeeding is a right?
I think it's fair to say that all human rights are in many ways interrelated and interconnected. You can't have health without a right to vote, without a right to speak.
Much more direct to say you have to have a right to eat to have health.
And so we think of these rights as interrelated. So if you go back a slide, when we look at these partnerships, we see that the partnerships among the organizations responsible for child rights, health rights, food rights, rights in education, rights to a healthy workplace, and the funding for a lot of these organizations all need to come together under a partnership that would create an intersectional right that is greater, where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Are there examples of that in other areas?
And getting these organizations together to do anything,
I would imagine, is almost impossible.
Based on my experience.
In the back there, we can address that.
Perhaps the problem that we have spent 30 years focusing on is right to food, instead of looking at breast milk for what it is, which is a biologically living thing that conveys benefits that are far beyond nutrition. And I wonder if that's part of it, is that we spend way too much time in the food argument and not enough time in the fact that it's not just nutrition. It has much more far-reaching consequences. So I really like this because I think that this actually is the way it needs to go, because I think part of the problem is we've muddied the waters by saying it's nutrition and nutrition only, to the detriment of the fact that it's more than nutrition.
Amen.
Right.
Well, that's a really good segue. Thank you very much. Because